Welcome to the IPF edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the pulmonary fibrosis community.
Hello, and welcome to the Rare Care Podcast. This is your host, Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. We're at the American Thoracic Society's 2026 conference in Orlando, Florida, and our guest is Teresa Barnes, founder of PF Warriors. Teresa, originally from North Carolina, started the first nonprofit patient advocacy organization for pulmonary fibrosis in 2001. She's not a patient herself, but the disease claimed the lives of many members of her family. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
Talk, if you would, about PF Warriors, how you started it, why you started it, and what your mission is.
First of all, one of my patients actually started PF Warriors, and he later became more sick with, you know, general illnesses along with his pulmonary fibrosis. And he asked me and a colleague, Dolly Kravitsky, to take over the organization. So a few years ago, that's what we did. So I'm the chief executive warrior.
That's an interesting title. So PF Warriors is based in North Carolina?
No, we're not. We're actually based in Irving, Texas, which is where our founder lives still in the region. But we're a virtual organization. So we have about 30,000 patients around the globe. Many of them are in the United States, but we assist patients. Basically, we say, you know, we are patients helping patients. So we have patients working with the organization. We have support groups for patients that are virtual. We have a Spanish-speaking support group. We also do education webinars on a monthly basis and educate them on topics that are important to their disease.
30,000 is a lot. Is this a membership-based organization?
There's no fee, but people join the organization. And it's so that we can give them access to video archives because patients do appear in some of those. So we do have people sign up so that they become official members, but there's no fee involved.
I see. So let's talk about the disease, if we could. PF it's a rare disease, but it's not that rare. And as we've discussed already, many patients, if they live long enough, will go on to develop pulmonary hypertension as well.
They will. And, you know, pulmonary fibrosis is becoming, in many ways, less rare, but it's still rare enough that it doesn't get prioritization in a lot of ways. And the disease is also, I mean, unless someone is lung transplanted, it really is deadly for all patients, and usually in 3 to 5 years. So it's a really lethal disease with very few options, and no options that improve quality of life or allow patients to live without disease.
Right. So I just attended a panel, in fact, talking about IPF, idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, in which my understanding is that once a patient is diagnosed, the median survival is 3.8 years among adults 65 or older, and the 5-year survival rate is only 20 to 40%.
Yeah, it's actually a shocking numbers, and we have a growing group of patients that are younger. I have two patients right now that were transplanted in the last year that are in their early 30s. So it's becoming more common in younger people. It's also common in people of all backgrounds, all diverse, you know, areas of the world. You'll practically see cases of pulmonary fibrosis. It's becoming more common because of environmental factors, more than likely. There's also a genetic underpinning in some of the cases, probably about 15 to 20%. And that's where my family falls. My father had the disease, and he passed away, and then every 2 years for 10 years, another family member also passed from it.
This must be very painful. I wanted to ask you about this. So you're coming from this in a very personal point of view here. You said your father died of pulmonary fibrosis within 2 months of diagnosis.
Yeah, well, it's a tough disease, and it's hard enough to see it once. When you see it, you know, five times, and then you know that you're also at a 50-50 or higher risk, it becomes your mission. Because really, I don't have a choice. And I have a daughter. And my goal is to make it so that she doesn't have to worry about this disease. So I've spent the last 24 years of my life trying to help solve the disease, working with scientists, working with industry, working in the patient community, working on Capitol Hill and off Capitol Hill, trying to raise awareness. We just did a listening session with the FDA 2 weeks ago to educate them on the disease so that hopefully we can soon be seeing more drugs coming through the FDA, because FDA has a better understanding of, one, what patients are willing to accept and risk benefit, but also why the disease is so urgently needs therapies.
So from my understanding, patients are prone to exacerbations, hospitalizations, both of which lead to a huge financial burden on their patients and their families and healthcare providers. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, it's a really tough place to be. And, a lot of times patients have difficulty getting insurance to cover medications, especially new ones. And there's a recent one that was just approved in the space. We, years ago, had trouble getting people when they went on disability because pulmonary fibrosis doesn't allow them to normally, to carry out jobs that they probably had before. And it took years for us to convince Social Security and Medicare that the patients were disabled, because they were using numbers that weren't applicable. They were using what they call pulse oximeter number but they were testing them seated in a chair. And when our patients are seated, their breathing may be practically normal. But as soon as they stand and walk across the room, then they can drop like a rock. And so now that has changed because of advocacy efforts to educate Medicare and Social Security.
I wanted to go back to one point. You said that the incidence of the disease was increasing, and you think that may be because of environmental factors. What factors are we talking about? Like, the rate of smoking is now at an all-time low in the United States. I understand that fewer than 10% of adults smoke, and this is for the first time ever.
Yeah, that's a great thing. But vaping is now filling in. And we know that, vaping is a whole other animal. And we really don't know what we're going to see yet relative to that. However, what we do know is that particulate matter, which is what you can't really see, but it's pieces of things in the air that you're breathing every day. We know that our patients are breathing in particulate matter. So, for example, people who have been in Iraq and Afghanistan were high risk for the disease. So we're seeing a lot of veterans, a lot of soldiers who returned from Iraq and Afghanistan with the disease. We also are seeing a lot of patients who were in the Vietnam War that were exposed to Agent Orange. That's a well-known issue. But for many years, that was not covered.
We've written about that, in fact. What about microplastics?
We're still learning about them. That's sort of a new thing, but absolutely, that's got to be a risk factor. Also, things like pine trees, pine dust, wood dust, certain occupations put people at higher risk for the disease,
but
for example.
Those have always been around. So why would you think more people are getting it now?
Here's the thing. It may not always be that there are massive more numbers. It's just that we're recognizing disease as well a lot sooner. But genetically, some of these families are going on to have more family members. You're going to see growth there. Certainly with environment, our environment has not improved over the last 30 years.
Could it also simply be that people are living longer?
Absolutely. And the older someone is, the higher their risk is of developing the disease. There's also a lot of comorbids. So if someone, for example, is treated for cancer, their risk of pulmonary fibrosis is higher. And so, and people who have rheumatoid arthritis have a very high risk of developing the disease.
Of course.
So there are a lot of other diseases that are also increasing in incidence and prevalence, which also raises the risk of this disease.
And pulmonary hypertension being one of them.
Absolutely. And it's, if our patients live long enough with the disease and are not transplanted, ultimately they will develop, almost all of them will develop pulmonary hypertension.
So talk about your organization, if you will. What is your budget? Do you have a staff? What is it exactly that you do?
Yeah, we have an unpaid staff generally. We have two people on staff that are the directors, myself and Dolly Kravitsky, who are paid staff. We literally help patients navigate the disease. So whether it's through support groups where they ask questions of each other, we encourage them to meet. It's good for patients to know other patients who are going through what they're going through, especially in a rare disease. And we also have webinars regularly that cover subject matters such as, How do I eat? What times of day should I eat? What kinds of foods should I eat? You know, what are my breathing activities? Am I doing breathing exercises? Am I going to pulmonary rehab? Should I go to pulmonary rehab? Should I be involved in a clinical trial? What kind of clinical trials are specific to my type of pulmonary fibrosis? Really educating them on everything within the spectrum of pulmonary fibrosis. And we want to make sure that they know how to ask questions of their doctors and that they can kind of advocate for themselves.
This leads me to ask you, under FDA guidelines, a rare disease means fewer than 200,000 Americans have it. From what I understand, it may be more than that now.
I think it depends on how you ask the question. Right now, we still stick with those numbers. In the future, that may change. But I think because each type of disease, it's just like cancer. Cancer is one big disease, but there are many diseases within cancer that are rare, correct?
To the best of your knowledge, how many patients have PF at any given time?
You know, we've used the number 148, 150,000. Many use 200,000. It just, you know, that's about where we range in the United States.
So very briefly, I wanted to ask you about therapies. Now, we know that there are at least three therapies on the market to treat PF. None of them actually improve the quality of life for very long, right?
Yes. There's a new drug that's been approved for pulmonary fibrosis called Jascade. And that drug, is brand new on the market. And so a lot of patients are not on that drug yet. But it will be great to see if there's improvement in, we've heard, by listening to information from scientists who have studied it, how the side effects are lessened and so forth. So we're really excited to see that. But there are a lot of patients on the original therapies, which were both approved on the same day. 10 years ago, more than 10 years ago. And those drugs, Esbriet and Ofev, many patients are able to tolerate them, but a lot of patients cannot. So that's why it's good to see new drugs come on the market.
I understand. In the 1 minute we have left, any final thoughts to wrap up?
Yeah, I mean, thank you, first of all, for sharing our stories. Pulmonary fibrosis patients go through so much. Their lives are not a lot of fun. And, we need as much awareness out there as possible. We need to make advances on the regulatory side so that FDA will see pulmonary fibrosis and other deadly lung diseases more like a cancer than like a more common, less deadly disease. So we're really excited to be on your podcast. Thank you so much for having us, Larry.
Thank you. We've been talking to Teresa Barnes, who's Chief Executive Warrior for PF Warriors. And this is Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advisor.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.